Hello, welcome to Rainbow Shaman. I am Annette Lachmann and this is my podcast for Shaman Journeying.
Hello Ernie, nice to see you finally.
Hello, I am figuring out this digital technology. It's beyond my imagination skills, I'm telling you.
Yeah, but last time when our group, for whom I do the video now, we were meeting, so it was shortly before it started, you suddenly had a complete fallout. But, well, we did the journey to you anyhow, so, and it worked. Many people said they were feeling so hot, they could totally feel you, they could see the fire, we were dancing around like a fire, and they could feel you doing whatever on them, so I was happy that I managed to meet you as you told me to be there in half an hour. So I really had to speed up with your Phoenix to get there. So.
Well, we got it done. That's what really matters.
Yeah. So I only told the people a little bit. So I want you now, because since I didn't really tell them a lot of what we promised you would tell them. So that's what we're doing today, if you're okay with this.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's very good. So the topic was, as you know, many of the friends who were listening, they did the shamanic training with me or their clients or friends. And they also know that, like in the shamanic work, I'm working also with people that struggle with diseases and anxiety. And in your case, you're a teacher and a healer. So people don't really expect that teachers go through such struggling times as well. So tell me about the experience with the threat of death. But before getting there, I would really like to ask you generally about Cherokee perspective on life, death, the circle of life and death.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'm going to answer the question about death, but before I do, I think it would be good if I explained how I got there, and that involves the cultural and societal perspective, as well as what I have gained in this time strolling along this earth here, just being amazed pretty much every day. But when you asked me the question and we were going to do this at the meeting, you know, I thought, oh, hell, this is gonna be a piece of cake, man. I grew up in this there, yeah. And it dawned on me, well, yeah, it's real simple if I go with my, you know, definition. But when I look at this, okay, I've been living in at least two cultures, the Cherokee culture and the colonial culture that they call the American way of life here all this time. And I said, well, you know, yeah, Cherokees have their own cultural and societal things having to do with death. And just what is it exactly? And that was when I came to a most intriguing discovery. I don't think we have one anymore. Now, at one time we did, and it was understood among all the Cherokee that death was this transition, sort of like a rebirth. You were born into this world, now you're being born into the next world. And it's not something that we need to mourn. We celebrate this, you know, just how you're going to get there is nobody knows for sure. But the one thing that all Cherokee can agree on these days is, yeah, it's the only way you're getting out of here. And, however, we have been so colonized I got a hold of a few of my relatives and talked to folks and just remembered things and come to the realization that we don't have that anymore. We have some Cherokee that still view it that way, like I do. But I would say in the overall aspect of the population, that's the minority view. And the majority view is pretty much some version of the Christian idea of death. One, you die and you go to heaven where you spend eternity dropping to your knees and worshiping this God that supposedly created everything. Or you're just totally fucked up during your life and you go to this place where it's eternal punishment, eternally burning in fire. And neither one of those two options really sound too attractive. And so I'm going to go with the one that I grew up with. And that is that it's this transitional period. Now, what we don't know is what it's like beyond there. But I am absolutely convinced that there is existence beyond this thing that we call life. And yeah, that just comes through these different experiences I've had in my lifetime dealing with people that are supposedly dead. I remember my very first experience of that. I was just a little kid, little guy, maybe 4 or 5. I don't know. I lived with my grandma. And from grandma's bed, we had a direct view to the barn. And the barn was just this old one-room cabin that my uncles had converted into a barn because the guy that lived there had died. And so it was full of bales of hay all the time. And I know that because I was always in there playing, even though I wasn't supposed to be. This one night, something woke me up. And in Cherokee, this voice says, "Chuj ni," which translates into English as "look, boy." And so I looked out the window and the barn was on fire. I could see flames coming out from inside the barn through the window that it had. And I'm like, whoa. So I woke up grandma real quick because I know this is not like a cool thing. This is not what we want to happen. And she looks and freaks out, jumps out of bed and throws on her cotton house coat over her nightdress, grabs me by the wrist, and boom, we are off toward the barn, which is, you know, cool. That's what you're going to do, except grandma never wore shoes. I did. She did not give me time to put my shoes on. We're hauling ass across the forest, and I'm in bare feet. It's like, all right, I can do this. About halfway, the barn was probably about, you know, 100 yards away. I don't know what that is in meters, but, you know, it was far enough away you didn't smell it because that's where the pig pens were. But, you know, close enough you could see it. About halfway there, she stops and looks again, and what we can see is a figure walking around in the house carrying an old kerosene lamp. That's, we didn't have electricity out there, so that's what we used, were these old like oil lamps. And she just breathed a big sigh of relief and said, "Oh, it's only Sam Campbell's ghost. Let's go back to bed." Well, I'm looking at this, and, you know, I have heard all of these stories about the monsters and spirits and stuff in the forest. And it's cool. Grandma's world was alive like that. There were spirits and monsters and ghosts and everything But this one really sticks out for me because she just took it in such a state of relief. And so she tows me back to the house and gets back into bed and makes me get into bed and says, now go to sleep. I don't want you attracting him over here. And I'm like, oh, okay. That moment is cemented into my mind forever. There is existence after death. And so, you know, growing up, I'm asking all about this. And what I learned from my grandma and my other teachers and my uncles was, we don't know what's on the other side. And until we go there and come back, we can't really know. But what we can do is look at the world we exist in now. Okay, and we know that every moment of every day, the way it is, depends entirely on how we, as a person, look at the day, what our mood is, what the mood of everyone around, what all is going on. And that is what creates that moment. And we're supposed to learn that. And if we learn it, then we're like, okay, why do we need to know this? So the assumption is made that it is the same over there, but only more so, because you're no longer bound by the laws of physical reality. So when you think it, it instantly is. So you have to learn to control your thinking, because what you're creating is going to have an impact on the whole universe. And you want to learn as much as you can, because when you get over there, you got to, it's like being born here. You've got to have people that kind of feed you in to this new way of being. And we say that takes 7 years. And so the first year, we don't speak the person's name ever for a year, so that there's nothing calling them back here. You're done here. You graduated. And when you come back to visit, it should be because of your choosing, that there's a reason, not because you just can't let go of what it was here. And so you, after the first year, then you celebrate that birth, as we called it, every year for 7 years, because by the seventh year, they are completely grown up or transitioned into that level of existence. Because when you go over there, you're still you. You're still you. And what you didn't quite get all totally processed here, you have to there. Because you're in some kind of, you're in this level of existence where you can, now you have access to all of this information, but you have to learn how to gain that access and when and how to use it. And so anyhow, that is the foundation. That is where my personal perspective on death comes from. That that's pretty much the way it is, and I've had my experiences in life, like I said, starting with that first little event with grandma, and other experiences that are completely unexplainable by any other explanation. I know what my eyes saw. I know what my emotions responded to, all of that. Okay, can I grab a handful of it and put it in your face, prove it? No. So my idea of what it's like over there is just as good as anyone else's. And there's I think, a good chance that it's the correct view, but there's just as good a chance that it's not. And it really doesn't matter. What does matter is that there is something beyond there, beyond this thing that we call death. There is an existence beyond that. And we're going to know what it is and how it works once we get there. And if it is, and we do all of this learning and stuff and get there, how cool, man. We're prepared to some degree. And if it turns out I'm wrong and we're all wrong, well, what the hell? It doesn't really matter anyway.
So, but you said that you don't kind of speak out the name of that person for a whole year. Like,
right.
If you talk about it, you just, how would you address them? So you talk about your father, but not saying his name, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
The fact that the person existed is not forgotten. We just don't use the name so it doesn't, like I said, unnecessarily call them back into our affairs.
Okay, and then after 1 year, you can talk about the name again. It doesn't matter then anymore.
Yeah, because the connection, that desperate, oh, my family or my wife or my boyfriend or whatever, is no longer that strong.
Mm-hmm. But would you say then you still are connected, like in this Mexican tradition where you have the day of the death, like you have the day when you think of the death and they're kind of part of your world still?
Yeah, not like, yeah, you just... we still do that today. It's they call it Decoration Day, and it's been kind of, lots of people have taken it up and do it, but it is not that much different from the Day of the Dead thing. You celebrate all of your ancestors and have a big feast, and you set a place for them as well. Now, used to, you went to the cemetery to do that, but people are scattered all over the country so much now that doesn't. The people that live in the near the cemetery still do, but most everyone else is doing it in their homes or in sacred places they found where they can go and have that sense of sacredness of the event, the dignity of it. And because of that, and I said, that goes back to the old times too, because at these events, you dress in your finest. You know, you come in your finest clothes. And the reason for that is when this person graduated. So when you go to your child's graduation from school, you know, you don't go like you just came out of the field, you know, all covered in dirt, you know, clean yourself up. Look, add a little honor and respect and dignity to the event. Okay, with that being said, then it becomes part of the culture. Okay, when you get a clue that your transition is approaching, that time is coming, you need to really focus on, okay, how do I do this with honor and dignity so that my family now sees, okay, this is really not a thing to be feared. This is a thing that we don't know when it's going to happen and we don't know how, but when it does, we go into it head on, with honor and dignity, says, here I am. Sorry, I didn't get totally dressed, but circumstances kind of dictated this, but here we are. And I asked my grandma once, you know, what is it like exactly? And she says, well, here's what I think it's going to be like. And I said, okay. And she says, you're sitting around a fire. You're kind of wondering why you're there. And then all of a sudden, the most beautiful person you could imagine in existence appears before you. She says, for me, it'll be a man. For you, it'll be a girl. I was little at the time. Or whatever. But it's going to ask you to dance. And you're going to get up and you're going to dance. And there's going to be music and songs being sung. And it's just going to be the most wonderful dance you could ever imagine. At the end, he's going to set you back down and tell you, welcome to your new world. And I really liked that image. I've hung on to that forever. You know, and I never bought into the Christian image of the guy with the robe and the scythe, you know, and he's coming to like reap your soul. No, it was more like, this is the person that helps you get to the other side as painlessly as possible.
Well, that is beautiful. And this really helps you not to be so fearful. I mean, to be afraid of whatever happens. It's such a beautiful vision. And I'm very sure that many people would like that too, because like the shamans of the Andean, they say, you need to get rid, lift all this weight and leave this life as alive as possibly you can do this. So it's very similar. I like the indigenous approach to it. So it's much more beautiful than this purgatory and this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't like this either. So I like that vision. So I'm totally adapting to that beautiful vision of your grandmother. I love it. It's nice to imagine myself having a last dance.
It's a beautiful image, isn't it?
Absolutely. But during the last months or years, you yourself have gone through this very challenging time. So like when you were, let's say, confronted with this life-threatening situation, could you then also relate to that image? That did it help you? How was your experiencing with this?
It did help me. And at the same time, what really is when the doctor first told me, you have lung cancer, and it's the small cell, from a Latin word, and it's pretty bad shit, and it has a possibility of killing you. And I said, well, that has been my understanding of cancer all along, that you know, the end result can be fatal, but fuck, so is life. and the doctor was, it was a female doctor, she's a little taken aback. She said, no, you need to take this seriously. And I said, well, I am taking this seriously. This could kill me, but the fact of the matter is, it's not going to kill me today. I got right now in this day to live. And you know, I get done what I get done depending on my mood. I might do a whole bunch of shit, or I might later on in the day get depressed about this and have a shitty day, but more than likely I'm going to go, I'm going to possibly die from this, but then I could have possibly died just driving to the appointment. And I have a greater chance of dying doing that than I have from this lung cancer today. So, one of the things I wanted to do when I first learned about it was when I was a kid, the average lifespan of an American Indian male was 35 years old. That was it. You know, and that was, if everything went right, we had a few elderly people, but not many. Most Indian men died around the age of 35 for all sorts of various reasons. And so I was determined to beat. I was going to beat that record. If I didn't do anything else in this life, I was going to beat that 35-year-old average lifespan. Well, hell, I did it. I mean, I'm going to be 70 here in December, and I still feel pretty good. I don't feel like I did when I was 20, but I don't think anybody expects that. And all these people that you see on TV running these commercials about I'm 80 years old and I'm still functioning like a 20-year-old, bullshit, man. And that's in your fucking mind. It's in that Viagra tablet. You know, get real, man. You're 83 years old. So just deal with that. Don't try to deny it. And so I got there. I've doubled that. And I am not convinced in my mind that I'm not ready. It's like, okay, if this kills me this year, kills me next year, when I go there, man, I am going to show you folks how to do it. We are coming in with a fucking party and nothing personal, but I'll be leaving you folks. And then I'll be wishing the best for you, but I got another road to travel, and I'm pretty interested to see where it goes. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to die, but I was going to die before the cancer anyway. This is just, okay, this is one possibility, and there's a myriad of others, and it just seems absolutely certain that you're not getting beyond it. I mean, even the Christians admit Jesus died. He was dead for 3 days. So even they admit you ain't getting beyond it. So you got to pass through it. And I'm kind of looking forward to that adventure. I had an event in Vietnam where the medics swear that I was dead for like 5 or 10 minutes. They're not really certain how long. And did I remember anything? And I thought about it, and it was interesting because I had this typical zoom through the tunnel toward the light, that whole thing. And my mother was a big time church goer, so my grandma told me, man, you read their book so that you know if they're telling you what their book says or not. And so I read the Bible a dozen times, and grandma, of course, made me explain it to her. And each time I did, I understood a little more. So that was kind of cool. And that image from the Bible of this big city with the pearly gates and everything was right there. I was heading right toward it. And I remember being so disappointed because I liked my grandma's and my uncle's image of what the white people have translated as the happy hunting ground, you know? And it instantly shifted. It instantly shifted to that. Here was a replica of our little community that I grew up in, and there was all of these people that I had attended their funerals. So I knew that they were on the other side, and there was my dog that had died. And I'm like, whoa. And then I thought, well, what was that other thing? And boom, we were back there looking at approaching the city that's described in the Bible. And like, no, that's not where I want to be, and back. And I remember making that bounce on numerous occasions until I'm kind of a slow learner. It clicked in my head. Oh my goodness. This can be exactly what I want it to be. And then it was about when I made that realization, this voice, and it sounded like one of my aunts that had died. She said, No, you're right about that, but you're not here to stay. Go back. You've got some more stuff. And then boom, I was back in my body with this medic looking at me with kind of a startled look in his eyes, shouting across to the other guy, the helicopter, "He's alive!" And yeah, boy, yeah. All of a sudden, the pain and all that, like, oh boy, this kind of sucks. I was kind of liking where I was, but I couldn't go back there. So maybe this whole thing about we have a pre-appointed time to die may be true. That makes me kind of sad. Just like the concept that, okay, you didn't get this life right, so you got to go back and do it again. I think that is so fucking cruel, because you have to go through puberty again. Oh my God, I know it goes against the rules of cruel and unusual warfare, man.
But on the other hand, wouldn't you say then at least it's very good now you do this kind of work, looking at your stuff, reflecting on what you're doing, and just not play that you're just playing here, but just really just growing also with all the stuff you get. I mean, you are growing too. I mean, you had all these challenges, and also you've been doing so much in your past years, also the success with uniting the white and the red Cherokees, and then you were in the middle of it, and suddenly this bang, that cancer kind of pulled you out of this. So, but you said before, yes, you could die any day. That's true, but you can also choose not to give up and to dream in something else, to dream in, like, to continue to pass on your knowledge because you feel it's not your time. So didn't you do exactly this, like during the past month?
Yeah, pretty much, but I didn't do it in such a way that was the primary focus of what I was doing. It was just part of what I do.
Yeah, that's true. And did you have support and what you did? So what did you do then?
With this COVID-19 that our government has absolutely refused to take on in any reasonable way, it's not just me, but everybody been kind of pushed into this lockdown situation, you know. I mean, you don't really have to stay there, but if you got half a brain, you know, okay, yeah, well, I got this going on, so if I go out there and get that, I'm probably going to die unnecessarily, you know. You know, especially since I could avoid this, and why would I, and what if I don't, but what if I get someone else sick and they die? You know, then that's on me. And that brought up a whole another line of thinking. And that is about killing. Because I remember when I got my invitation to visit the Vietnam War. That was one of those, what they call a holy shit moment. You know, life has all of a sudden gotten real. And I've grown up with all of this. I mean, life is so sacred that, you know, you don't even go out here and pick plants more than you need to use. And animals, you don't kill more than you need to eat. And there's these prayers and rituals to go through to do all that, and even the land. You know, you don't go in here and tear up the land. And now I'm being asked to go to a foreign country with people that are the same color as me, and are basically, all they're asking to do is to be left alone, to live their life the way they choose to live their life. And what is wrong with their life is it has been determined that this communal lifestyle that they live is not the preferred lifestyle. Capitalism is what we're doing here, and you need to become capitalist. Okay, and they don't want to. Just like my people didn't want to. It took a long time for the Cherokee to go from a communal culture and society to this colonized capitalist lunacy that we all exist under here. And so, yeah, Grandma, what the hell am I supposed to do here? And she says, well, let's see if our elders, if our ancestors have any wisdom on this. And I'm going to cut this short, the red fire that the Cherokee had was created specifically for that question. Is it okay to kill people? Because already in the culture, no, murder is not okay. Period. Bottom line, it's never okay. But now we're in a situation where our ancestors made a treaty, which is a promise, with these people that if they ever got into war, we would help them fight this war. And when we look at it, we are violating our own principles and laws, because these people have never done a thing to us, ever. And we are flying halfway around the world into their homes, and we're bombing them and shooting them and doing all kinds of what I consider to be rather unfriendly, unfriendly actions. And my relationship with my uncles changed at that point in time. You know, okay, boy, today you're becoming a man and the whole world has changed. We're looking at this, and you know, we had discussed this what I have said here. Now, what are you going to do? There's only, you know, three options here. One, you refuse to go, which is going to put you into the American prison system. Two, you leave the country, go to Canada or somewhere. But when you do that, you're forcing someone else to take your place, and the day of reckoning will come for that choice. Or three, you go, and in that going, in that war, in that fighting, you respect the honor and dignity of those people. And you realize if you were not there carrying a weapon and being an asshole, they probably would not shoot at you. Some of them will. That's just the way some people are. But most of them don't. So if they're not shooting at you, then show them that you come from a people like them, and maybe we can find enough common ground that we're no longer enemies, that we become friends who just happen to be caught in a really terrible and unjust war. And the reason that you want to do that is because every time you kill another person, a small piece of your soul dies. And it will take you forever in this lifetime to get it back. So if you do have to kill, do it only in defense of yourself or your fellows, but don't go out just wantonly killing. And that was kind of like, wow. I don't know what my ancestors thought, but to me personally, it was like, holy shit. It's no longer black and white. There's more to life than black and white. And if there's more to life, then this whole other side thing I probably can't even imagine what that's about. My ideas are probably so minuscule as to be laughable.
So, right. Yeah, well, that has been an experience. So you've been confronted with death all your life, actually, like going to the army, going whatever. You always had death as, let's say, a companion in your life, not being your enemy, but it was all there, because it's not really like, if you consider him to be your ally, death, that's what our shaman says, well, it's better to have him as an ally and not as an enemy, because he will show you that you need to live in the moment. So what you said before, living in the moment, that's what you did during the past month. And remember, we did also some, let's say, intentions on you. We did healings with you. I mean, I was there last year studying with this already, but this year was extremely interesting because you were better, and then at some point the cancer came back. And would you just now share a little bit what happened during the past month, where you had all these people a little kind of freaking out for what happened?
Something weird just happened. It was kind of like life. We're cruising along here, and all of a sudden, oh, missed the whole little section.
So what happened with your last experience of your treatment and cancer thing? That was what you were going to tell the people also. Your little wonder happening there.
Well, I am absolutely convinced that this is the result of all the intentions and the healings that the group was doing. But what needed to happen was for me to get myself, my ego, out of the way. I was blocking this healing. And it's interesting to me, because it was not a thing I did intentionally. It was, you know, it was not a thing I didn't want. But when I got the announcement, hey, man, we're still here. It hasn't grown any, but it's back in your brain now, and it's still in your lungs and shit. I remember that day going, well, that's not what I wanted to hear. And I got to go back on chemo. And fuck, my hair just grew back. Yeah, and it was like, I was really pleased about that. You know, I had it in my plans for the first time in a long time, as soon as they lift the restrictions on the damn coronavirus, I'm going to get a fucking haircut. Not because I want a haircut, but I got to kind of even this mess out. I do want it to grow, but not exactly the way it looks at the moment. I just came on home and like, well, fuck, whatever. Ain't going to be today, and what do I need to get done today? And just went back to my regular everyday life. Because that is really, really the emotional impact that it has on me. Like, yeah, I'm going to die. All of us are, but hell, I'm not dead right now, and shit, man, I got stuff to do. So, you know, I'll worry about later when I go back to the next doctor visit. And I went back to the next doctor visit, and the doc comes out and says, stop, it's gone. And I was like, what? Yeah, I just like got goosebumps. He said, it's not there. It's gone. There is no cancer in your brain. And I was like, holy shit. Well, that didn't happen until, you know, I just, you know, gave up. Like, okay, I can't extend this one more day or not. By no matter what I do or think, so fuck it, I'm just going to let it go. And when I let it go, it's when all that healing jumped in there and did its thing. And I just sat here and I look at my image in the mirror and say, you're almost 70 fucking years old. You have been telling people about this all your adult life, and you're sitting here surprised because it happened to you. You know, what the hell is the matter with you, man? You know, just like, oh yeah, okay, got it. You know, we're on this. So I don't have any type of natural fear looking into this thing, and I certainly am not at all even interested in all these people coming up telling me, oh man, you've only got this much longer to live. I can sell you $1 million worth of life insurance for only $200 a month. And my response is, what if I live? Then what are we going to do?
So what did the doctor say? Like, how could he explain that sudden that it's gone? I mean, how much time was between the diagnosis and that he suddenly said it's gone? So, I mean, it was not so much time in between.
It was 48 hours. I mean, they are absolutely thrilled that they have a record of this spontaneous remission that they can look at. They can look at the one set of scans and say, see here, do you see it? Okay, and we've been treating it for this period of time, this, that didn't work, this, that didn't work, this, that didn't work. And now we're doing this, and this is the results we have, and it's nowhere near as bad as we expected it should be. And looky here, 48 hours, it's totally gone.
So did he suspect your healer's army? Or what did he suspect? I mean,
I told him that. The radiologist goes with that because, you know, he's just like, you know, you told me you had this group. And I said, yeah, they pray for me. They're trying to keep me around for some odd reason. And he said, well, you tell them it worked, man. He said, you tell them today it worked. And he's a Korean guy coming over here, learning whatever. And he's got more of their traditional outlook on things. So he wasn't really surprised, but he wants these American doctors to sort of, you know, take a look at this and admit, like, okay, there's more to this than what you know. Well, they're not going to go that far.
No. And it doesn't really matter, right? It doesn't really matter because we at least would agree to say that it's always worth having a group supporting you with the intention of seeing you already healed, like sourcing from the future, seeing you already in a different state. I mean, we've had this from Dr. Emoto, this Japanese doctor who did this with the water, influencing the water. So there's more to anything what we know.
Yeah. And the regular doctors, the whole cancer crew, well, they're not going to go with the spontaneous remission. They're going with, okay, it was the immunotherapy. We haven't yet just quite figured out what it did. And then I'm just like, yeah, whatever floats your boat, man. Whatever is the best explanation for you, that works for me. But it's gone, and that's all I really need to know.
Exactly. And that's what we all wanted to hear, because we really want to hear more of you. And we will continue doing this, and we will just eliminate some of the technicalities which kind of cause some problems of logging in or losing you or whatever. And we will definitely continue to have some talks with you. So thank you, Ernie, so much. And we see you next time. All your friends listening to you, they will see you next time. So you can say goodbye to them because I will stop the recording now.
All right. We will talk again, and I'll be here tomorrow.
Thank you, honey.